to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Welcome, everybody. We are here for another episode of Radio Life Sciences, and today you hear my co-host Gisella.
Hi.
Me, Maarke, and our two guests, Lisette and Koen. Lisette and Koen, welcome. We are going to introduce why we invited you later in this podcast. But I'm first curious, because we're talking about education, who was your most memorable teacher, Lisette?
Yeah, thanks for having us anyway. That's a good question. Who's my most memorable teacher? And it may be the same for a lot of people, but probably my PhD supervisor. And the reason for that is that she really gave me the space to grow. So didn't tell me what to do. And I think that's very important for a person to evolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is so that stuck with me.
Yeah. Cool. Is that something that you also try to pursue in your role as a teacher?
Yes, I try to do that as much as possible. It really depends on the situation, of course. So if it's really a course that there is a right or wrong answer, then you guide a bit differently. But if the goal is to evolve and to progress in then it's easier or it's better to guide a person.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you. And Koen, who is your most memorable teacher?
Yeah, I think the PhD supervisor is a good option, but I go way back. Before the PhD supervisor, even before there was like a master and a bachelor. But it was like a course, and the teacher was Fons Kremers.
Hmm?
I know him. He taught me as well.
Yeah, so he's from cell biology in the what now is called Kruid building. And this guy is really enthusiastic. He jumps around. He motivates you. If you even don't like cell biology, if you did this course, you will like cell biology. So it's basically his enthusiasm that caught me.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's kind of magic if teachers can do that with you as a student. Okay, cool. And then on to your role as educators. I think our listeners also want to know who you are and what's your role at your department. Lisette, can you explain?
Yeah, sure. I started working at the Utrecht University at the Faculty of Veterinary Medicine in 2020, actually during COVID, and I was hired as a researcher. I still am in the same role. I just became assistant professor, and my main role in education is one-to-one supervision of PhD students, but master students and bachelor students. And also, I have some roles in education in the regular curriculum and in elective courses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of education. Maybe it's nice to mention your last name as well.
Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, we didn't do that either. Oh, but
that's my fault.
Yeah, it's Lisette. I'm Lisette Utomo.
Yes, good to know. And is your background also in veterinary medicine or not?
No, that's actually really funny. It's not. It's in human medicine. So I studied in Enschede, technical medicine. But somehow I ended up at the Faculty of Veterinary Medicine. And I guess the reason for that is that there is a lot of similarity between veterinary diseases and human diseases.
Yeah.
And we try to incorporate this in our research. But I don't have a veterinary background, but we are a mixed group indeed.
Oh. And Koen?
Koen Braat.
Yes.
Do you want to hear my whole resume and how I ended up here in UMCU?
Just make it short.
Okay. Can be really started biology. Mm-hmm. That's why how I met Fons Kremers.
Yeah.
Did a PhD at the Hubrecht. We wanted to make embryonic stem cells in zebrafish. It never worked. So we started stem cells of the germline in zebrafish. And that got me really enthusiastic about RNA translation. So I went to Austin, Texas. We studied RNA translation in the fruit fly. Then I came back, studied stem cells and primary cancer models for almost 5 years at the NKI. And then I went, I think it's already 16, 17 years ago, to the UMCU when they were strengthening the regenerative medicine groups. Because before there was a building, everything was like and its own departments. So we were hired to strengthen the community. And I think we did a good job. So we are now together in a building, etc. And I started as a postdoc at UMC, working on induced pluripotent stem cells, mesenchymal stem stromal cells. And gradually I did more and more teaching until the point that I did only teaching and I quit doing research. I think I'm now a full-time teacher. I forget, maybe 8-9 years or so, or maybe even longer. I don't keep up with time. Yeah. So that's how I ended up. So we met actually in the RMCU building. Yeah. So that's fourth and fifth floor.
The Regenerative Medicine Center, right?
Yeah, yeah, fourth and fifth floor of the of a part of the Ruprecht Institute. Mm-hmm. And well, we were always talking about education and courses that are lacking and courses that are really needed. Mm-hmm. That's how we ended up in developing this course that we're going to talk about.
Yes, yeah. That's a nice bridge to our topic of today, because we invited you because you developed the course Applied Lab Calculations for Life Sciences. And we are curious to know why you developed this course and what's it about.
Yeah. Shall I take this one? So indeed, Koen and I, we ran into each other often at the Institute. And besides talking about science, we started talking about internships. So students who are in their master year, they do two internships, one long one of 9 months and one short one of 6 months. It may have changed now in the curriculum, I'm not entirely sure. But we noticed that there was some knowledge lacking about calculations that you, yeah, I mean, everyone gets calculations in high school, so probably you know how to do them, but to apply them in real life, in real science, that gap, that was really big. We saw a lot of students struggling with that up to a point that you find solutions are wrongly made, cell culture goes wrong, and it's not because the student cannot calculate, but because that bridge between the actual theory and the application was simply missing. So yeah, Koen and I, we started talking, I think maybe 3 years ago already about that, and we were thinking how can we help these students. So we thought, let's set up an elective course that that students that are interested, or maybe even know that they're not so good in calculations, that they can sign up for it as a preparation for their practical internship, in such a way that that they can actually when they start, they can fly, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. And yeah, one of the, I think, special things about your course is that you also use VR in this, virtual reality, right?
Yeah.
How does that come about or come into play in this course?
I think when Koen and I started to discuss the content of the course, it was quite dry. I don't know. Yeah, it's very, very theoretical. Of course, still with cases that you find in labs. But for a student to have some kind of idea and how everything goes in the lab, we were thinking, how can we make it more real without actually having the students in the lab? Because there's also limitation of space, of course. So then we got to talk to Harold van Rijen, and he suggested to incorporate an innovative element to our course. And I think he came up with the PR. Do you remember?
Yes, he did, because there's already this module to learn to culture cells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this was actually a follow-up that module.
Yeah.
But now actually to weigh chemicals and to measure liquids and to make solution, set pH all also in a virtual environment.
Yeah. And I think that gives you a lot of possibilities, right? I think we discussed beforehand that you can also have things explode and without actually harming people.
Yeah, because safety in a lab is also very important. So to know where to discard certain chemicals, to understand where things go. And of course, you don't want to experience that in real life. But it's also important to know what to do when it does happen. And thank God it doesn't happen that often. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, we designed the VR module in such a way that the students can also experience what will happen if things go wrong. And I think that's very valuable for, yeah, to give it a real picture.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Yeah. And sounds like something that's very useful to at least experience without any consequences in this case. Yeah. So what do the students think about the course?
Yeah.
You don't know yet.
No, we do. We do know. It's a lot of them find it really fun to do. Of course, like the technological aspect is difficult to it can be difficult. So and with that I mean the haptics of the feeling of actually touching, let's say, I'm doing the quotes, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Touching something in your virtual reality without actually touching. So that can be still improved. That's difficult. But in general, the learning goals, they find it very, very nice to experience it and to learn in this way. We do have some students that get nauseous. To be honest, I also get nauseous if you use it for a long time. So that is also something we have to keep in mind, of course. But other than that, I think the feedback was very positive.
And can you give us a little bit of a description what the module looks like? So what do students experience in this VR module? What can they see?
Yeah, so they enter the lab. They go to the hood or the chemical cabinet. And then they have an assignment. So it says you have to weigh this amount of that chemical. And we practiced this calculation before in theory, but now they have to do this like in the virtual reality environment. And we have like this calculator, this VR calculator. So they have to calculate for a certain molarity how much they have to weigh. Then they have to turn around. They go to the cabinet to get the chemical. And then they have to pour or they have to scoop. And if they miss it, you know, they get a warning because you spilled. And the same when they have to measure the volume of the water. So they get all these corrections when they do something wrong, which is really nice. So they get a sort of feedback. Sometimes it's a bit too strict in my experience, you know, when you're really carefully measuring and you think you pour everything in the beaker, for example. Sometimes said, well, you spilled, and then you say, well, I didn't spill. But anyways, it's sometimes a bit too much of correction. And then we have, of course, the pH measurement.
Oh, right.
Which is also in there. I didn't do this myself. This was developed later. And like Lisette said, sometimes you get nauseous. And I do really get nauseous. So I didn't look any further in this module. But it's also in there. And what I could see when we did actually the VR in the course, I filmed them and the students for 10 seconds. I asked them, can I film you for like 10 seconds? So they were sitting there, you know, and like hands were going up and they were moving like this and this and this. So they were really, really enjoying this practical part. Yeah.
So it was really physical for them as well.
It's really physical for them as well. Yeah. Yeah. And they learn to be careful, you know, with the chemicals. And that's what you need to learn before you go into the lab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what kind of students are attracted to your course?
We had several master's programs, most of them were from regenerative medicine technology because we advertised that. Mm-hmm. But I'm now also coordinating the CCDB master program. But during one of the sessions when Lisa was still there, I asked the students afterwards, I said, would you like to have done this course? And I think like 70 or 80% of hands went up. But that means like at least 30 students.
Yeah.
So I think there's a need.
Yeah.
For this course.
Yeah, I think we mainly, our main audience, let's say the student population, are the students that are going to do a practical internship. Because I think some programs don't have that many practical internships. But if you're going to a lab and you're going to do a lab internship, either with cell culturing or with chemicals, think it's very useful. And indeed, the majority of our students, they were going to do an internship.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's actually refreshment of what they learned before, but also a practical way to, yeah, try it out.
Yeah, and I think really that connection between the theory mm-hmm. and how to apply it. Because you see that a lot of students struggle with the application. So
yeah.
they know the formulas, they know them, but then don't really know them when to apply and exactly how.
Yeah, that step was missing.
That step is missing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you are teaching this course once a year, I think?
Yes, it's once a year in the second period. So it starts in November, also this year. Students can sign up through OSIRIS for that, like the regular courses.
Yeah.
And what capacity do you have? How many students can follow it?
Yeah, we're actually limited by the... That's a good question. We're limited by the VR glasses at the moment. So we are limited now to 24 students.
But we need to have the UMC buy more VR glasses.
Yeah, let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Or teach the course multiple times during the year. Well,
yeah.
Because is the course often full or?
We ran it last year for the first time and we had 12 students sign up. So that was not full yet. But it was also because we got approval quite late. So it was the first time and we ran for the first time. And then it's also maybe good to have it not completely full. So we can also evaluate and we evaluated a lot how to improve. We learn as well.
Nice. Yeah, so we're going to advertise it more.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very useful if students already take it into account when they start planning their master's
exactly.
I don't even think it was in the course guide yet. No. So
probably not.
So
that will help definitely.
Yeah.
Then the nice thing is about when we teach it, so we both do the lecture part, right? And we both do the calculations. And I do it totally different than Lisette.
Yeah.
So this is also nice for the students. I mean, some students get like a bit confused. Huh? What's the method? But other students say, oh, yes, we can also do approaches like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So without the formulas, but just based on logical thinking, you can all calculate all these answers. Yeah.
So
that's what also makes it nice.
Yeah. So it can appeal to different types of students, different types of thinking.
Exactly.
Methods. And,
and see what works for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not everything works the same for everyone.
Yeah.
What would be really nice if we could like replace the joysticks. So now we have these joysticks in our hands. And of course, they totally do not mimic what you have in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Would be really cool if you would get these gloves, you know, when you can pick up stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because it was for me when I started practicing, also when we developed the module, it was really hard to pick up things. You have to like... I'll push a certain button or on top or on the side. That's not really intuitive.
You may also be a bit of a generation.
I'm sure you're right. Yeah.
If you like gaming, I guess it's you pick it up easier. I guess. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's also what students encounter in their daily life, but also what you're telling about different ways of approaching this might also be something that they encounter when they start an internship with different supervisors doing things in a different way. So that's nice that you can do that as well in the course. What you were saying before that you are going to improve some things for next year. Are there things that are worthwhile to share with the listeners?
That applies to the VR part. So when Koen and I were practicing, we thought, okay, so we have four scenarios, mm-hmm. Each of a bit different length and sometimes a bit of repetition. So we thought, okay, we have 1 hour for the first two, or maybe 1.5 hour even, for the first two scenarios and 1.5 hour for the first three. For the last two, sorry. Mm-hmm. And then when it turned out that the students were much faster than we anticipated. So they finished all four scenarios I think within 2 hours.
Yeah.
So we could actually shorten the time needed. That's one thing that we improve in terms of planning, I guess.
Yeah.
In terms of content, I think we covered a lot of things. We may include more practice exercises. We have a lot of them because we have a combination between lecture and interactive class. So hoor college, werk college, it's a combination. Mm-hmm. So we practice examples and exercises during the lectures. But we may prepare more for the students to take home and to prepare to try at home.
It was one of the feedback topics.
Oh, okay. So the students want this.
Yeah, they want this.
They wanted it, yeah.
Yeah, that's good to hear. It's always good to hear if you learn from what the students give you as feedback.
And the positive thing about it is that the students really went fast through the VR modules,
mm-hmm.
that we can then maybe do two groups.
Yeah. Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
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 So we double the capacity on the same day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then when we're less limited than by the glasses. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So besides from students, you as teachers, what would you recommend other teachers that are thinking about exploring VR techniques for their education?
I think it really depends on what you're teaching. I think VR can be a very nice addition, but you have to have a good team in helping you develop, because what we experienced is that it can also become frustrating, the scenario. For instance, what Koen mentioned, picking up things can be difficult. And you don't want the student to become frustrated and miss the learning goal. So I guess it really depends what you would like to teach in your VR course. Right, I think that's
maybe a bit of addition is I mean, in our course and also in the cell culture course, the students need to be active. But you could also think of a VR module where you just sit and look around, right? And then it would be really cool to see how a DNA mark is set on the DNA on one of the nucleotides, or how a methyl mark is set to one of the histones, or a transcription factor binds to the DNA, stuff like this. I mean, that would be possible, but that's, I think, would be really nice. But then you just sit and you look around, right? You sit in the nucleus and you look around what happens in the nucleus. So a signal comes from outside, goes from the membrane to the nuclear membrane, goes into the nucleus, and it sets off this whole transcription network. That would be cool.
Oh, I would love to see that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice experience to have. Yeah. 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 I think it has a lot of possibilities, the VR applications. But you were also mentioning it can be frustrating. Was there ever a moment while developing it that you thought, okay, we're not going to do this anymore? Or?
Yeah, there were some moments indeed. But can we really honest, yeah. Because you have to test also a lot. So as a tester, you have to do things wrong in order to see what is the outcome in your VR module. And then you have to keep repeating that to see all the possible outcomes. So that is quite extensive.
So it took quite a lot of time then also to develop.
I'm trying to remember how long it actually took. It took a bit longer than anticipated, a couple of months, I think. Yeah. So we work with this developer, and then who incorporated our feedback, and then we had to test it again, and then we gave them feedback again. And some things also they just couldn't fix because it was technically not possible. But then Koen and I were like, yeah, but that then why do we do this? Then that's not real, which is of course also a bit weird because indeed it is virtual reality. It's not real reality. So we also had to put a different mindset to that. So yes, it could be sometimes a bit frustrating. But I think once you get the hang of it, that really helps. Then you can go quite quick and and learn a lot. Yeah.
And the developers were people here at the UMC as well that other teachers could contact and.
No, it was an external party. So, okay. But it was through the innovative. I don't know.
Technology enhanced learning, I think, maybe.
Yeah, so Danza was our male person.
Yeah.
Danza Onvle.
Danza Onvle, yes.
And she contacted the external party, and then we had regular meetings. But yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's good to know.
So other teachers need to contact Danza for this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's check after this recording if that's
if she's going to be okay with us mentioning it. Yeah.
So what was difficult during the supervision when the students did the module is that you do not know exactly where they are in the module, and we could with an iPad we could see where they were.
Oh.
But I was not experienced enough in the module to actually help them get out of the problem they encountered during the VR module. I mean, Lisette was much better in this than I was.
You really need to know the module yourself, indeed, to help to guide the students a little bit. And Koen indeed didn't do the last few because it was too much to do. But if you know the module yourself, of course, it's easier to guide. And then you can quickly check where is the student and say, oh, no, it's on your right-hand side. Or pick that thing up and not this one. Yeah.
Yeah. So in summary, it would be useful, I think, for courses which have either a practical application in it or something that you want to really experience from the inside. Doesn't have too many students enrolling, or at least not at once, because there's limited capacity, I think. And also, you should not get nauseous while teaching the course, I guess, if you want to experience it yourself and be able to help the students, I guess.
That makes it more easy.
It makes it easier.
And take a lot of time to develop.
The development is quite long, but also really nice to do. It's a different kind of experience, especially as a researcher. You don't encounter those things too much. So it's different experience also for us.
Yeah, you get out of your comfort zone a bit.
Yes.
And it's very innovative. Yeah.
And would you say it was worth it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, then that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you
for sharing this.
Yeah. Welcome.
Sounds super interesting. Now I'm actually really curious. Maybe I'll see if I can join your course in November.
Yeah. You're very welcome to do so.
Yeah. You experience it ourselves.
Refresh my memory on lab calculation.
Yeah. It will be very confronting.
I think so. Yes. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Yes. So thank you, Lisette and Koen, for telling us today about your course and the special effects in the course. I think it's very nice for other teachers to know, and also for students. If you're listening to this podcast and you would like to sign up for the course, have a look at OSIRIS or contact one of the course coordinators to ask for more information. The next course will be taught in period 2, so keep your eyes open for it. Then I would like to thank Gisella.
And I would like to thank Marke.
Yes. And our listeners, of course. So stay tuned till the next episode.
Bye.
Bye. Radio Life Sciences. Radio Life Sciences. Radio. Welcome to the Radio Life Sciences podcast, for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators, for the scientists of tomorrow.